Well, Happy New Year coming up pretty soon, right? Today is the 30th, and tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and then we bring in 2019, and welcome to 2019 early to all of you. Do you remember 19 years ago, the Y2K thing? Do you remember that at all? For those of you that are younger than 19 years, let me explain to you what happened. Back years and years ago, it was 1999, right? And we were supposed to be colonizing the moon by then, but we weren't. Instead, we had all these computer programs all throughout the world that controlled all sorts of systems in the world. And somebody realized about the late 1900s that to save programming time, instead of calling the year 1999, they just called the year 99 in programming language. And so when the program rolled over from 1999 to 2000, some computer programs would think that it was actually the year 2000 or the year 1900. And so there were very smart people out there saying, wait a minute, we need to go through every line of code there is and make sure that when we roll over from 1999 to 2000, that the world doesn't fall apart. And so there were a lot of people predicting that there was going to be mass chaos and the world was going to fall apart and things were horrible. And so it was big in the news. You guys remember that? Yeah. So we had some friends from our church and we decided that if the world was going to end, that we were going to go and end it with our friends. So we all went to this hotel in our town and we rented out a whole bunch of hotel rooms. We went down to the lobby to celebrate this whole bringing in the new year. And in the lobby, they have magicians and shows and dancers and singers. It was just a great big party. And so we went to this hotel to ring in the whole entire new year. And all of a sudden, it counted down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The new year came in. And guess what? Chaos ensued. Nothing. But, there were a few glitches that actually did happen. And there was a big concern that in a couple important programs, there could be problems. And when I was in seminary, they actually taught us a class called System Dynamics. And System Dynamics says that when you have a group of people, like a nation or a country, and you add some sort of pressure or stress into the system either absorbs the stress or the system falls apart. And so nobody knew that when the clocks changed, what stress was going to enter into the system. Was it going to be a mild stress and the system stays together? Or was it going to be one of those stresses that comes into the system that blows the system up? That's what people were worried about. The professor that taught the class on system dynamics was a psychologist. And he had all of us guys get in a room and we all held hands. And he said, now this is what it's like. And he pulled on one person, he pulled the shoulders, and we kind of all absorbed that stress in the system. And then he came and he violently pulled somebody out of the circle, and basically the whole circle fell apart. There was a break in the circle. That's what happens. You put stress in a system, and all of a sudden the system either handles the stress or the system falls apart. See, that's what was happening in Colossae. There is for our epistle lesson today that we read, it really does match with bringing in the new year. Because let me tell you what was happening in Colossae. There was a place that Paul went called Ephesians. And Paul went and lived in Ephesus for 3 years. And he started a church in Ephesus. Now, while he was in Ephesus, there was a guy from Colossae. And his name was Epaphras. And so he journeyed over to Ephesus to where Paul was, and he lived with Paul and the Ephesians for 3 years and learned about Jesus, learned about the teachings of Jesus, learned about what it was to be a part of the Christian faith. And then he left Ephesus and he went back to Colossae and he started a church. And Paul kind of left Ephesians, he went on, and he ended up being in prison in Rome. So Epaphras is in this church in Colossae. And all of a sudden, things start going wrong. The culture of Colossae was totally different than the culture of Ephesus. And the problems that they were dealing with in Ephesus were not the problems that they were dealing in Colossae. In Colossae, it was different people and they had different things. One of the things they had here was that they worshipped angels. And they venerated angels. If you didn't like pray to angels and ask angels to kind of help you, you were like kind of strange. And also at Colossae, they said that you had to eat certain types of foods and you had to do certain types of things. These are things they never did in Ephesus, but they did them at Colossae. And so they bring this people together to start a church, and it's like everything I learned to deal with is not happening here, and the things that are happening here, I don't know how to deal with. And he was very stressed. And he's like, there's so much stress coming into the system, I don't know what to do. So what would you do? Epaphras leaves Colossae and he goes to Rome where Paul is and he lays his heart out to Paul and he says, listen, he says, they're dealing with stuff I don't know how to deal with. And it's interesting what Paul says. He says, tell them not to follow angels and worship angels, actually. He says, don't follow angels and don't follow the culture. Don't let the culture follow you, basically is what he's saying. He's saying, listen, what you're dealing with here in Ephesus is totally different from what you're dealing with Colossae. Because the culture is different. You have to figure out what's going in your culture, and then you have to deal with that. Now, what's interesting is that in the United States today, even though we all have the same people and we speak the same language and we all do kinds of the same things, we have found that every generation of people, every person that's born, is kind of turning into a different culture than the generations that come after them. And even though we may look alike and talk alike and do the same things, they are probably as different as going over to a different country and doing stuff in a different country. I've always said to people, it is too bad that our children look like us. Because we think that because they look like us, they are us. But they're totally different from us. And they have totally different experiences than we have. If you think of somebody who grew up and was born in the United States in 1915, do you think that person is different than somebody who was born in the United States in 2015? Do you think we've seen a different change in the last 100 years in the United States? And the answer is, of course we have. Of course we have. I want you to just listen to some of the things. I spent a lot of time recently reading this incredible report by one of these institutions that goes out and looks at generations. So the generations, the people that are now coming into power and running companies and leading countries and things like that, this is what they believe. It's interesting. They believe that financial success is becoming less and less an indicator of total success. They believe that companies need to contribute to social or ethical causes that they believe are important. These people that are beginning to lead our country and lead our world, they have less and less trust in institutions. They have more and more of their savings is in cash, and they don't put a whole lot into the stock market and securities. They have a greater reverence for the environment. Their daily work is part of a bigger and a larger part of social concerns. They see that what they're doing at daily work, they see a connection from that to the wider world and what the world is doing, especially in societal concerns. They believe that every corporation should be responsible, that they should be a responsible citizen in the world around. This is interesting. The generation that is just now taking power, they have stronger brand loyalty to those organizations that they believe are impacting the world positively. So if they find and grab onto some sort of organization that they believe is being a responsible citizen in the world, they have incredible brand loyalty to those organizations. They have a higher value of things placed on experience over the acquisition of material things. So for them, what is more important to them is that they don't have a lot of things, but they experience a lot of things. That's interesting. They have an ability to build communities around shared interests rather than geographical proximity. In other words, they're building networks and connections and community around people that have shared interests, not necessarily people who are living in the same geographical community. Now, do you think that impacts the church? They, rather than bridging otherwise disparate groups, they enjoy serving on their own schedule. In other words, they're more than willing to work and do and serve and be a part of the community. They just want to do it at their own time, in their own pace, and in their own way. They don't like meetings at all. They do not like meetings. And if you're going to go to a meeting with some of these people in this younger generation, there better be a good purpose to that meeting, and there better be a good start to the meeting, good end of the meeting, and you better come to a good decision in that meeting. They insist that technology be used to streamline every aspect of an organization. And they also believe, and they're also frequent job hoppers. In other words, I don't know if you know this, but you people used to say, I know that kids, you're not going to believe this, but people would actually go and work for a business and stay in that business for their whole life and then retire from that business. Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. Today's generation that's coming up, they're going to hop around from job to job to job to job to find satisfaction in their work. And even if they like satisfaction in their job, they still might job shop and move to something else just because it's something else new. That's what they do. And they insist on more direct fulfillment of job. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that that has any impact on how we operate our church? Do you think that that value system and how they live their life has any impact to what a church does? And the answer to that is, of course it does. Of course it does. Every church, if it's going to survive that generation, these people that are coming up, they're going to be like the people in the Y2K, and they got to go through every single line of code and find out, are there any things in there that just aren't going to work? And I believe that churches that do that are going to do that. They're going to survive, but the churches that say, no, this program is perfect, it's fantastic, and we're just going to ride it out, they're going to find out that there's going to be things that are going to happen in the culture and the world around them that they're not going to be prepared to deal with because they didn't do the hard work of going through and seeing what is really important, what do we really need to carry forward, and what are stuff that we just do because we've always done it that way and we're, by goodness, we're never going to change it. That's the hard work that every organization, every company, every nonprofit, and yes, every church is going to have to do that work. And I don't like that we have to do that work, and it's horrible that we do that we have to do that work. And yes, it causes a lot of work and pain and suffering when you do that work, but if it's not done, those organizations, those corporations, those nonprofits are just simply not going to survive. Or they're not going to survive in the same way that they've survived over the last 50, 100, 200, 500, 2,000 years. It's going to be messy. It's going to be messy because it adds stress into the system. And when you add stress into the system either accommodates that stress or the system falls apart from that stress. And so Epaphras comes to Paul and he says, I'm experiencing stuff that I didn't understand about. What should I do? And what does Paul say? Paul, first of all, says, well, tell them that they shouldn't worship angels, okay? Because if they worship angels, then they're not worshiping the true Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. That one's kind of a no-brainer. And he's saying, you know, don't do all this stuff about what you should touch and what you should eat and all that sort of thing, because that kind of violates the law that Jesus came to abolish and says, my forgiveness and my grace is sufficient for you. But Paul knew that when you enter stress into a system, that the people in this system just need to know that things are okay. And so this is what Paul goes on to say. It's from our epistle reading. He says, put on then, as God's chosen one, holy and beloved, compassionate heart. Kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against each other, forgive, as Christ has forgiven you, so that you must also forgive, and above all these things, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And some translations say, binds everything together in perfect unity. You see, what Paul is saying is don't let the system break down. And the system isn't going to break down because if the stresses of the world around it, the reason why the system will break down, according to Paul, is if we simply stop loving and forgiving each other, and if we stop being unified in our purpose as we move forward. If you look at any organization that has ever been around, they don't fail because of lack of resources. They don't fail because of lack of resources. And they don't even sometimes fail because of lack of vision of the future. Most organizations fail because they've stopped loving and forgiving each other. Here's the good news. Whatever we do to our code, whatever the church looks like in the years to come, it does not change our standing with Jesus. Because however that code gets up to him, he kind of reworks it and still loves us no matter what. Our forgiveness with him does not matter upon how well we do church or what church looks like. Our forgiveness is because he came on earth at Christmas to live among us and to be part of us and to rectify our relationship with God so that we can stand before him. And that gives us the freedom to be able to kind of go through the lines of code and figure out what needs to change and what needs to maintain in our world. That is incredible, powerful stuff. I don't know of any organization other than the church where the founding father of our church, Jesus Christ, says, just do it as well as you think you can, and I still love you. You go to any other organization, they're going to say, oh, we've never done it that way, so we can't do it that way in the future, and those organizations die. That's why the church has been around for as long as it has. We've been able to accommodate many things in our world around us. But the greatest thing is that we know that Jesus has loved us and forgiven us, and that forgiveness covers a multitude of sins. I'll never forget, we're at this New Year's Eve party, and we're all celebrating, and all the kids went out and just celebrated by themselves. We were crazy, stupid parents back then. And apparently, there was this creepy guy, as my daughters call him, that was following him around. We're out there celebrating, and this creepy guy following him around. And they came back later and they said, there's this creepy guy following us around. And we were worried about Y2K. We were worried about the computer program failing. We were about the world ending. What we should have been worried about is creepy guy. But God was watching over creepy guy. They made it back and safe. And even though we were focused on the wrong things, God always focuses on the right thing. He loves us unconditionally. And he knows the right things that he needs to focus on to help propel his church forward. We're going to be seeing some changes in our church. We're going to build a sanctuary. We'll probably be doing some changes to our worship service. We might be changing systems and things and all that sort of thing. And all of it is designed to say what's important that we should maintain and what's okay to let just modify a little bit so that we can understand and impact the world and the culture around us better. And are we going to make mistakes? Of course we're going to make mistakes. If you knew how many mistakes I made in 10 minutes, you would just laugh. But I make a lot of them. But the great thing is we've got a great, phenomenally good congregation. When this congregation was started 10 years ago, the number one thing that they said was that they want to be bold to impact the world around them. So the heart of this congregation is in the right place. And for that, I am so eternally blessed. When these changes happen, when the world around us changes, know that Christ is still present and on his throne and loves us and cares for us and our redemption is secure. And I am so excited about the future. I truly am so excited about the future. I look and think about all the great things that are going to happen, and I think, and our church will be right there with them. And that fills me with joy and hope. So as we move into 2019, may God richly bless you, and may you have a wonderful 2019, because Christ, his forgiveness, is still with us. In Jesus' name, amen.